You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF. I'm Scott Lamar. Chances are you have been treated by a nurse practitioner on a visit to your family doctor's office. Nurse practitioners are often part of medical groups today. Nurse practitioners don't have medical degrees, but they do have extensive training and can provide many of the same treatment options as a physician. Some have thought that nurse practitioners were the answer to providing health care for underserved areas. Nurse practitioners took on a bigger role during the COVID-19 pandemic. However, in Pennsylvania, nurse practitioners are limited in that they must be coordinated with a physician. On today's Smart Talk, we examine the role of nurse practitioners and whether they could or should be able to expand what they do. We have a large panel today. Joining us, Dr. Lorraine Bach, PhD, past president of the Pennsylvania Coalition of Nurse Practitioners. She's a family nurse practitioner in Carlisle. Dr. Joyce Nestrick, PhD, past president of the American Association of Nurse Practitioners and family nurse practitioners in Washington, Pennsylvania. Dr. David Talenti, MD, incoming president of the Pennsylvania Medical Society, and he's a gastroenterologist practicing in Wayne County, and Dr. Tiffany Leonard, MD, president of the Pennsylvania Academy of Family Physicians, and she is also a family practice physician. I want to welcome all four of you to the program. And I'm going to say right up front that my first few questions will go to our nurse practitioners. Dr. Bach, what do nurse practitioners do?
Nurse practitioners are advanced practice nurses who treat and take care of patients in a variety of settings at an advanced level. So we do much more care than you would see from a registered nurse. We write prescriptions, we interpret lab tests, we order and interpret other studies, and most importantly, we collaborate with colleagues across all fields of medicine, including physicians, physical therapists, nutritionists, and people, you know, all across the board.
So let me turn to Dr. Nestrick. What can't you do? What in Pennsylvania can't nurse practitioners do?
Well, we like to focus on what we can do, but of course we refer, we have a scope of practice and we generally keep within our scope and we refer to others outside when it's necessary. But I think it's important to know that we provide access to high quality care. And as Dr. Bach said, we provide a primary, acute, and specialty health care to patients of all ages and all walks of life. And that includes prescribing medications and working in a patient-centered environment to help patients make healthy choices about their life.
Can you make a diagnosis of a serious or complicated illness or disease, say like cancer, for example?
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, just the other day, I had a patient come in from the emergency room that clearly had lymphoma by the labs and the tests that they had. And I was able to admit them and they were biopsied and found to have definitely had a lymphoma. So it's something that we see every day. I think it was very serious. Diagnosis that I think anyone in family practice would see and know what to do about it.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Bach, in Pennsylvania, nurse practitioners must coordinate with a licensed physician. What does coordinate mean?
There's a very specific definition in the law about what's required from our collaboration. And one of the things that we have to do is have a legal agreement filed with the State Board of Nursing that outlines what our scope of practice is in that collaborative relationship. So, you know, for me, I own my own practice in Carlisle, Pennsylvania. I've owned my own practice since 1999, and I've had a collaborative physician. I can tell you that, you know, I contact my collaborative physician whenever I need to on situations that may require his advice or expertise. But most of the time, you know, I'm dealing with the problems for my patients independently and without intervention from him.
So you're saying your coordinating doctor is not at the same location, physical location as you? You have your own office?
I have my own office. I've had my own office since 1999. My collaborating physician has physically never been in my office or seen any of my patients. I've consulted with him as required by law via telecommunication.
Consulted on what?
Various things. If I've had a patient who has an unusual EKG that I've done in the office that I find, you know, I may need his expertise in looking at because it's not quite right or something that's beyond what I'm able to interpret. I've collaborated with him on medication choices in the past, but quite frankly, you know, our collaboration is, you know, just several times a year. It's not on a daily basis or a weekly basis. He doesn't review my charts. That's not required by law.
So when you gave the example of maybe looking at an EKG that you wanted some advice on, why couldn't you diagnose that, or why would you go to the coordinating physician? Does the law say you have to do that?
The law does not require me to do anything except practice within my scope. And when I find a problem or see an EKG or make a diagnosis or have a lab test that, you know, I'm not comfortable with interpreting without support, just like any other specialist, family doctors send people to cardiologists when they have cardiac problems that are outside the scope of the family doctor. We do the same thing as nurse practitioners.
Mm-hmm. So, Dr. Nestrick, what do you want to do? What do you want nurse practitioners to be able to do that they can't now?
Well, we would like for them to be able to practice to the full extent of their licensure and education. And that's supported by the American Academy of Medicine. That nurses, and since 2008, have called for nurses at all levels to be able to practice at their full scope of practice. And for advanced practice nurses, that would mean that we would not have to be tethered to another profession in order to practice our scope of practice. And we know that in 24 other states and in Washington, D.C., nurse practitioners are independent in their licensure. And we've had excellent results in all of those areas regarding access to care, which is our main focus, is to have access to care for all patients, regardless of where they live. But in fact, many nurses practice, nurse practitioners practice in underserved areas. And in Pennsylvania, we know that we are often filling those positions in HIPAA areas.
Mm-hmm. All right, so let's
bring... And if I could...
Go ahead.
Sorry. If I could, just an example of how this legal agreement, this collaborative agreement, is very restrictive. Back in 2014, our local medical assistance primary care center here in Pennsylvania and the Sadler Center, all three of their physicians resigned within a month's period of time. And they had nurse practitioners on staff there. But unfortunately, when those three physicians left, none of those nurse practitioners could see patients because those collaborative agreements had been terminated. And over 9,000 patients went several months without care until Sadler could hire collaborating physicians to come back in. Those nurse practitioners weren't collaborating with those physicians on a daily basis, but because of that legal agreement, those patients had to travel way outside of Carlisle. And, you know, it may not seem like a lot to go 20 miles, but when you have transportation issues and you have financial issues, traveling 20 miles to get your health care is a significant problem. And this was not an issue of not being able to deliver care. It was an issue of not having a legal document, a business agreement between the nurse practitioners and the physician. Mm-hmm. And I've other examples of nurse practitioners who've had to close their practices because the physician that they were collaborating with, either the practice that he was with was bought out by a health system and the health system would no longer allow them to collaborate and they couldn't find another collaborating physician, or because the physician wanted to retire.
Let's turn to the two physicians that we have on the program, Dr. David Talenti, incoming president of the Pennsylvania Medical Society, and Dr. Tiffany Leonard, president of the Pennsylvania Academy of Family Physicians. Dr. Talenti, representing physicians, why do you, and the law right now says that nurse practitioners must coordinate with a licensed physician. Your organization wants to keep the law that way. Why?
Sure. Well, you know, the examples that were given are they certainly abide by the letter of the law with a collaborative agreement, but I'm not sure they abide by the spirit of the law. So in my practice, for instance, I'm a gastroenterologist. I have two nurse practitioners as well as a physician assistant, and the collaboration that happens is that as Dr. Bach said, you know, the majority of time, probably 4 out of 5 patients or 9 out of 10 patients, the experienced nurse practitioner can diagnose and treat the patient without collaboration. But it's the patient, you know, the 1 out of 5 or 1 out of 10 patients who there's a twist or there's something that just doesn't seem right. I have my nurse practitioners walk down the hallway and grab me and say, let me run something by you. Let's collaborate and look at this case. And I think that takes medicine to another level, to a higher level, with collaboration rather than not having a collaborative agreement. So as far as we're concerned, the collaborative agreement is just that. It's an agreement to collaborate with the practice and bring medicine to another level. If you take that away, and you have a nurse practitioner who's practicing independently, and as Dr. Bach said, calling their physician just a few times a year. Then you have a practitioner who has a fraction of the training hours. You know, a nurse practitioner will have anywhere from 500 to 750 hours of training after their credentials, whereas a physician will have over 17,000 hours of observed training. So to make those to equalize those, I think we're heading on a slippery slope of having someone who has a fraction of the training of a physician acting as a physician. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of where we come from. We'd rather have the collaboration. I have, two nurse practitioners who are rock star. They're fantastic. Collaborating with them, they deliver fantastic care. In the absence of a physician, I'm not sure that happens.
Mm. So Dr. Leonard, Dr. Toletti brought up education. And while he was talking about those hours of practicing, why does that make a difference?
So I think in any field, be it medicine or the mechanic or the guy that fixes your HVAC system, experience matters. The more experience you have, the more encounters you've seen, the more likely you are to recognize abnormal. In medical school, but especially in residency, we're required to track exactly how many patient encounters you have. And in family medicine, for example, you can't graduate until you've had over 1,500 independent patient encounters just in the office. And that's not including the several hundred to thousand that you have to see in the hospital. And we document every encounter that we've had to prove that we can recognize normal from abnormal. And that's currently a level of training and documentation of our training that just doesn't exist in other fields in healthcare.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Bach, what about that? I mean, first of all, we'll put out there that the state says that, you know, you can treat patients, but that experience, that level of education that Drs. Toletti and Leonard were talking about, does it make a difference?
Excuse me. So first of all, the measurement of or the yardstick of patient care is outcomes. And we have the research to show that the level of education that we have is not negatively impacting patient outcomes. So hours of education is not the yardstick that we should be using to determine whether or not a practitioner is competent or not in care. It should be the outcomes of the patient. And to Dr. Leonard's point about logging, nurse practitioners are required. And when I was a faculty member at Penn State University in the College of Nursing training nurse practitioners, our students had to log every single patient, what their diagnosis was, what their treatment plan was. So we do indeed keep those same kind of records for our patients while they are for our students while they are in training, keeping track of every patient that they see. We talk about them in group sessions after clinical hours happen. We get together with the students and talk about particular cases. So, you know, it is important and it is required in our educational programs to keep track of patients' encounters and hours of education in the clinical setting as well.
We received almost a dozen phone calls that recorded messages, questions, comments before the show. Many of them were along the same lines. So we'll just use a couple of them now, but we will take some other phone calls as well. In fact, let's go to Bob right now.
Hi, my name is Bob Gasparo. I'm an elder law attorney in Pennsylvania. And as an elder law attorney, I communicate with other elder law attorneys throughout the United States. And it seems very clear that seniors have easier access to health care in those states where nurse practitioners have full practice authority. That's one reason I'm in favor of the legislation. The thing that really irks me about this issue with Senate Bill 25 is that seniors seem to be held hostage to the monetary concerns of physicians. Perhaps I'm too cynical, but I think physicians miss the money they'll receive when the nurse practitioners are forced to sign a collaborative agreement with them. Last year, I followed the Senate bill. I followed the Bill 100, which was the earlier version of Senate Bill 25. And I wondered why a Representative Hickernell was holding it up in his committee. Then I went and I checked the political contributions for Representative Hickernell last year. And I was astounded to discover that he received thousands of dollars from physician groups across the state. So maybe I'm too cynical, but I think that had a lot to do with why seniors are being deprived of good health care.
Dr. Leonard, there's a lot there. First of all, I want to point out for context that Senate Bill 25 that Bob was referring to, something was introduced. It's been introduced a couple times now in the state Senate that would allow nurse practitioners to practice on their own and not have to coordinate with a licensed physician. But the point he makes about money, and I received another email here that someone who is saying that it seems that what physicians are doing, protecting their financial interest, and that it's also about power. How do you respond to that?
So, first off, a lot of nurse practitioners are practicing within a healthcare system, and the big healthcare systems do not reimburse their physicians to supervise or to collaborate with nurse practitioners or PAs. So that financial aspect is already gone for anybody that's working in a hospital system, which is the majority of the people that are supervising or collaborating with. As far as outpatient private practice, the physician groups have been very open about negotiating caps on payments to physicians to be collaborating physicians. I personally collaborate with two nurse practitioners and I have not charged them because I don't feel that it is fair. So I think that may be an old practice, and there may be some assumptions there that don't hold up to truth and reality in this day and age. But I also can't speak for every physician out there. There are probably some that do agree with his sentiment.
Dr. Toletti, let me ask you about that as well, and also ask about power. You know, what the caller was saying is that the physicians are trying to, they don't want the competition, that they want patients all to themselves.
Sure. And I think, you know, the attorney who was on the phone said he thinks maybe he's just too cynical. And I with all respect to him, I think he is just too cynical. As Dr. Leonard said, the vast majority of mid-level providers of nurse practitioners are within a healthcare system with no payment for a collaborative agreement. The rest of them are in private practices, such as my two nurse practitioners, who don't pay for a collaborative agreement. Moreover, when we've had discussions with nurse practitioners in the past over the last 5 years, the Medical Society has actually said, look, if this is something onerous, a collaborative agreement, we can get a network of physicians across the Commonwealth, which will have a collaborative agreement with you for no charge. And that was conveyed. As far as not competing, I don't think medicine is a competition. I think doing the best that we can for our patients and collaborating so that the doctors who have the most training, nurse practitioners who are wonderful, spend time with the patients, are absolute rock stars. Collaborating together brings medicine to a whole new level. So I don't think the competition in my mind is not there. It's not a competition. It's how do we provide the best care for our patients through collaboration.
Let me bring something up that before we get to more phone calls and emails. There is, and I don't know whether shortage is the accurate word or not, But we do know that in some areas of Pennsylvania and really across the country, rural areas in particular, that nurse practitioners being able to practice on their own, that was thought to be the answer for providing access to health care for many of those areas. Dr. Bock, has it turned out that way?
Yeah. Nurse practitioners, we have quite a number of studies that have shown that nurse practitioners do tend to practice in healthcare shortage areas. So, we do see nurse practitioners going into those areas and practicing at a higher rate at the after graduation. And I would like to address one thing about the caller. You know, AARP endorses full practice authority across the United States for the simple reason that seniors do have a significant lack of access to healthcare, and nurse practitioners are more likely to open house call practices and deliver care in the home to those seniors that cannot get out. And, we see the endorsements coming from all the major players in this debate, even the National Academy of Medicine, which is, down in Washington, D.C., endorses full practice authority. The only organizations that don't endorse it right now are organized medicine organizations, and I wonder why that is. Mm.
Something, though, that you just said, you said about the research shows that that nurse practitioners will go where in underserved areas. I read a column. It was in the Philadelphia Inquirer. Now, it didn't quote where the research was, but it said, now, this was someone who was opposed to Senate Bill 25, but it said that the nurse practitioners tended to locate the practices where there were physician practices already. In other words, they went where the people were, where the patients were.
I would disagree that they go where the physicians are that they're tethered to. And so more people would be able to, and as a person who practices in a rural area and had my own practice in a rural area, that if they're able to go to a practice where they can practice independently, they're more likely to be able to do that. In fact, the AARP and the Rural Health Association and other national association support full practice authority because the evidence shows in North Dakota, in Nevada and other places where they were able to open up full practice authority, more nurses came even from other states in order to practice in those areas.
Dr. Leonard, have you seen that?
No, when they geocached it, they did show the vast majority of independent nurse practitioners did stay in areas that were already well populated by healthcare. Yes, there are some that go out into those rural areas, but it's not a large percentage above what physicians do. As you know, rural medicine has a lot of challenges that are not faced in suburban areas. There's less backup. The patients tend to wait to see their healthcare provider until they're significantly sicker. Because it's a rural area, the cost to the provider tends to be significantly higher, because there are fewer patients to sort of balance the budget for you. So there are ways to make that happen, to make that care happen in rural areas. Pennsylvania has actually made leaps and bounds to try to improve that. In the last 5 years, we've opened 9 additional rural family medicine residency spots just in our state to train providers specifically aimed at going into rural areas. And as I'm sure you're well aware, with the advent of COVID, telemedicine has come leaps and bounds further than we ever could have envisioned. And we know that's not the answer, but it certainly does help with some of those areas where it's just really hard to get any healthcare providers to go to, nurse practitioners or physicians.
Hmm. I want to take a phone call now. And on the phone is Senator Bartolotta, who is calling. Now, I'm going to say right up front that this is not something that was scheduled ahead of time. The senator is calling in on her own. Senator Bartolotta has introduced Senate Bill 25. Senator, are you there?
I am. Good morning, Scott. Thanks so much.
Yes. And like I said, I want to make sure that people realize this wasn't something that was set up ahead of time.
Not at all. As a matter of fact, forgive me, I wasn't even listening, but my husband, Bill, was listening. He says, you got to listen. Try to call in.
Well, your first mistake was not listening, but go ahead. What were you going to say?
I'm rushing to get into the Capitol for a 10 o'clock meeting.
Okay.
I'm very passionate about this, and I'm very, very happy that you're discussing this morning, because it's something that we desperately need to get through onto the Senate floor and voted out. Again, it passed almost unanimously the last time it was voted off the Senate floor. So I see it having a great advantage in getting through again.
Well, why? Tell us why. I mean, we've heard from the nurse practitioners, but what? Yes. First of all, as I said earlier, you've introduced this more than once. Why doesn't it get to the Senate floor? Why doesn't it get to the governor?
Well, it actually gets through the Senate floor and off to the House, where it was held up for a very, very, very long time in Representative Hinkernell's committee. And he had questions and concerns. And one of his concerns was, well, let's make it a pilot program. My answer to that question is, let's consider the 23 states, Washington, D.C., and every VA in America as a pilot program that has been effectively using this system for quite some time. We now have 24 states in the U.S., every VA in America, and Washington, D.C. doing it this way. One thing I did want to correct for the record is the fact that I believe it was the doctor may have, I think, the doctor had said that there's maybe 500 hours or something for nurse practitioners. Well, my bill for Pennsylvania would require the most stringent regulation for giving nurse practitioners full autonomy. That would be 3,600 hours and 3 years under a collaborative agreement before they would be able to practice in their own specialty, only in their own specialty. And it's something that Pennsylvania desperately needs now, post-COVID, because we have individuals who have been locked away, afraid to get out, afraid to go to their doctor. We see emergency rooms filling up with people, not from COVID, but from conditions that have been ignored because they were fearful of going to get medical care. Now is the time to release an army of fully qualified, highly educated, capable nurse practitioners to fill this void and catch these people and give very good quality care across Pennsylvania.
Senator, I want to thank you very much for calling in.
Thanks, Scott.
Mm-hmm.
Have a good morning.
Thank you. Dr. Tulenty, all the things that the senator brought up, you've heard before. Your response to that?
Sure. So a couple of things. First of all, having more postgraduate training for nurse practitioners would be welcome. That's number one. Number two, when we look at least our data that we have in the medical literature about outcomes for nurse practitioners, when the nurse practitioners state that they have just as good outcome as physicians, those are measured from nurse practitioners who are collaborating with physicians. We would welcome data from these independent states that have independent nurse practitioners that progressively, prospectively, looks at outcomes versus physicians, and we would love to get that data. The truth is we don't have that data right now. The data that we have are from nurse practitioners who do collaborate with physicians. So I think that, I think there's certainly, no one is arguing that there is a place for nurse practitioners in medicine. They are fantastic. All we're arguing is that the collaboration with physicians who have, a multitude times training that nurse practitioners have, that they collaborate with the physician to make sure that the quality of care, when it's not a cookie cutter diagnosis, there's no question that a competent nurse practitioner can take something, a CAT scan, what have you, that has a tumor and make the diagnosis, get a biopsy, and they're fine. It's when that one out of five or one out of 10 patients who there's a twist, where you need somebody who's had much more supervision at looking at things that are not cookie cutter, just to collaborate with them to make sure that the patient has a good outcome. So that's what I would say. But again, we are more than happy to look at real data of independent nurse practitioners from other states to see what the outcomes are and see where we could do better.
Mm-hmm. Let's take a we had a message from Janice. Go ahead.
Hi, this is Janice from Mechanicsburg. I have worked in the healthcare industry as well as the insurance industry for more than 25 years. I have worked with and have been treated by nurse practitioners for many years, and I find them to be knowledgeable, professional, and extremely competent. A nurse practitioner would be my very first choice for all of my healthcare needs. The healthcare system in this country is broken. Many states have granted nurse practitioners autonomy. I think allowing these professionals to practice independently and making insurance companies cover their services goes a long way to providing better access and more affordable care to the masses. Quite frankly, if nurse practitioners were a male-dominated profession, they would have probably been granted autonomy decades ago.
Okay, well, aside from the last part, which I don't know whether we're in a position to debate, but let's talk about some of the things that Janice brought up there. Dr. Talani, you just talked about the other states, and everyone has brought that up. 23 other states in the District of Columbia allow nurse practitioners to practice on their own. Their levels of education are probably very similar, if not the exact same, as what nurse practitioners get here in Pennsylvania. How is Pennsylvania different?
Sure. So I don't think Pennsylvania is different other than, and I would bet all the money in my pockets that the physicians in the other states were not for independent practice, mostly because there's no data on outcomes. So you heard the senator who called in talk about Chairman Hickernell. We had worked with nurse practitioners for months to bang out a pilot program here in the state of Pennsylvania, the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, to look at nurse practitioners in underserved areas, have them practice independently and measure their outcomes. It was going to be a 6-year program. We would have already been in year two by now, but that was House Bill 100, which was similar to Senate Bill 25. That passed the House. To have a pilot program for independent practice for nurse practitioners to measure and see how they do. When they got to the Senate, the nurse practitioners who had originally agreed to the pilot program all of a sudden dropped their support for it. So I'm here looking and saying, listen, you know, we welcome looking at it and seeing how the outcomes are. We even supported a pilot program for it. But once push came to shove and we were going to have a pilot program in underserved areas, the nurse practitioners said, well, no, we no longer support that. So I'd love for them to speak to that. I'm not sure where we go from there.
Dr. Bach, what about that?
So, you know, we did agree to the pilot program last year. And unfortunately, when we went back to the University of Pennsylvania and had their legislative specialists look at that pilot would have really only granted full practice authority to 47 nurse practitioners that met all the criteria. And even my colleagues in medicine can agree that 47 out of 16,000 is not a legitimate number to get good research data on. We have data from 24 other states that served as our pilot. Those are the states that are already doing full practice authority. We see in those states, in Arizona, 79% increase in rural nurse practitioner practices once they went to full practice authority. We see lower rehospitalizations. We see lower emergency department utilizations. We see improved outcomes for patients, and most importantly, we see patients being able to access healthcare. Collaboration doesn't require a statute from the legislature. Collaboration is what we do every single day. In all 50 states, nurse practitioners collaborate. What we have in Pennsylvania is a legal document that prohibits us from practicing if we do not have a contract with a physician. If my contracted physician decides to retire, if I can't find another one in 30 days, I have to close my practice and all of my patients will go without care. And that is inappropriate, and it doesn't facilitate good care for patients in Pennsylvania.
I have to say that we are getting a lot of response, a lot of questions, a lot of comments from listeners, both email and phone calls. So obviously it is an issue that many Pennsylvanians are interested in. And really, it's not a surprise when it comes to health care, their own health care in particular. They are very concerned. But we are out of time. I want to thank our guest for being with us today, Dr. Lorraine Bach, PhD, past president of the Pennsylvania Coalition of Nurse Practitioners, Dr. Joyce Nestrick, a PhD, past president of the American Association of Nurse Practitioners, Dr. David Talenti, MD, incoming president of the Pennsylvania Medical Society, and Dr. Tiffany Leonard, MD, president of the Pennsylvania Academy of Family Physicians. Thank all four of you for being with us today, and this is an issue that we will stay on top of, obviously with so much interest. Thank you for being with us today.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks very much, Scott.